Welcome to Mint's Editor's Podcast. Today, you'll be listening to Mint's Executive Editor, Anil Padmanabhan, sharing his top picks of the week with me, Preetha Banerjee. So it's that time of the year again where we become obsessed with listicles, like the best movies, the best books of 2016. So when I approached you earlier this day that we are going to do a year-ender podcast of the top five issues, you gave me five words. So while the first three words were quite predictable, the last three came as quite a surprise to me. And deliberately, I'm not going to reveal all of them. So I'll let the listeners decide.
I love this mystery which you're leading listeners on. I'll play along.
Okay, so the first word is Brexit. Apart from being the hot topic for debate from the beginning of this year, this referendum that saw UK withdrawing itself from the European Union has also been a talking point for you in many of your pieces. Why do you think this is so important?
See, Brexit was a moment where we learnt a lot of things. We learnt that what you see is not what you're going to get eventually. You had David Cameron, who risked his entire social capital in calling for this referendum, convinced that UK would vote for this, staying within the European Union, and he wanted to settle that issue once and for all. And that's when we realised that a referendum is not like a national vote. That is the one learning, which, you know, like a general election when people vote, it is a bunch of issues, local. It's not one issue, and it's not an emotive one. Very often, in the end, it's a calculated choice voter makes. That is one learning. Second was that we realized how vulnerable the world was, because suddenly the European Union always looked vulnerable, but after Brexit, it overnight that vulnerability spiked, and which has huge ramifications for the world because it's a powerful economic entity. The engine has obviously been Germany for so many years now, but a weak European Union economically is very bad news for the United States, for China, for India, all these countries. So in every which way you look, it was a very dramatic moment in global politics and economics. So my choice.
Do you think the debate around Brexit has sort of fizzled out, or are we still talking about it as much as we should be?
No, we are not talking about it as much as we should be, but that's a lot to do probably because of the process. Because you have voted for Brexit, but the process of exit is much long and winding. So I think people are also beginning to reconcile to this new era. So, which is why you're not seeing much of a conversation. But rest assured, the day of reckoning, the moment it dawns, we'll be back again talking Brexit.
Right. The second word you gave me was Trump. Personally, and I think I'm pretty sure globally, the news that Trump becomes the next president of the United States came as a shock for me. I mean, I know he's pretty entertaining with his often offensive remarks and tweets, but I really, even till the last minute, did not expect him to actually become the president. So, I mean, what do you think will be the implications, and what were your reactions?
Firstly, you should feel good because you're not the only person who didn't expect a Trump win. I think across the board, most people wrote off Trump. That's largely because we all influenced ourselves from the Western media, papers like New York Times, Washington Post. I mean, today they all have egg on their face because obviously they misread a great moment. Happens to the best, but it has happened a little too frequently for Western media. So it's a wake-up call. My reaction was complete surprise. As you're aware, we were planning our entire pagination based on a Hillary win because it was a first woman president, and we had done a lot of work in that direction. Of course, we had to rejig everything in a hurry. So yes, as surprised as you. And in implications, I think it'll be safe to say if he follows through on all his talk, that you're going to have a pre-Trump era and a post-Trump era. And like we ran the big piece today on the year of surprise, I think Trump promises to be your biggest surprise either way, whether he walks the talk or he doesn't walk the talk.
The third word you gave me was like very much expected. I mean, if you are an Indian, there's no way you're not debating the merits and demerits of demonetization. Even like more so now, because now the 50 days that Modi had talked about comes to an end now. So where do you think we stand with demonetization, and what do you think Modi will talk about tomorrow in his national address?
guessing what Modi will say in his national address is a mug's game. I'm not going there because I don't think we have ever guessed any of his moves that have come through, demonetization being an excellent example. I don't think any of us anticipated it, and we were all blindsided that night on 8th November. But net-net to me, see, demonetization has actually become a very divisive issue in this country, which is interesting because we have generally got polarized, not only in this country, in the world, because it's either my way or the highway. So demonetization has become another example of that, which is colored, all this noise colors deeper ramifications of such a move. See, it's an out-of-the-box solution. It is not prescribed by an economic doctor, which we know all these facts. But the fact is that politically, it is doing extremely well. And see, you must understand that what is happening in this world and in India right now is there's an aspiration spike. But that aspiration spike does not match with the reality of what you face in a real world. So you will get an education degree like in the US, like in India, but be unemployed, you know, or you get a job taken by somebody else, or corruption in India's case, lack of governance will hurt you in your job. So in every which way, there is aspiration, but massive disappointment. So demonetization, the way Narendra Modi framed it, he framed it as a class war. Okay, you have class war, and then you also have this feeling of Schadenfreude. Basically, I'm happy at your being unhappy. So especially if you are down and at the bottom of the pyramid, there's a certain vicarious pleasure when you see the rich are under the gun. At least in media, you're seeing the arrests and all these things. So politically, it is doing extremely well for Narendra Modi. Economically, the first round impacts are already visible. Everyone's pruned their growth targets for India for the year. We have definitely seen dislocations in the cash-based economy right down the line. But these are the negatives. But on the positive side, I definitely see a big step towards a behavioral change in this country. A behavioral change, not just in the digital behavioral change. I said in terms of, to me, like I wrote about it, saying that the premium on honesty had been restored. Because for once, public policy targeted the bad, said black money is not a good thing, corruption is not a good thing, and tried to walk the talk and gun for it. So to me, it mattered because I believe India should be a rules-based society. We've always been exception-based ever since we got independence in 47. We have rules, but we never follow it. We pride ourselves in breaking those rules by making exceptions through political connections. That's how you get crony capitalism. So to me, demonetization is not just the economics. It's the politics and the sociology. And to me, right now, net-net, and I think it's a good move.
Okay, as I said before, that when I was going through your list, apart from the first three topics that we have just discussed, I thought the rest could include, the impeachment of Dilma Rousseff or some technological advancement or even Harambe. I couldn't guess the rest of the two words. So the first one that we are going to discuss, you have given me Indian sportswomen. What do you want to talk about them and why do you think this makes it to your list of top issues of the year?
It's the story of the year. I think done a podcast around the time at the Olympics when Indian women did so exceedingly well. It's history now that the only medals we won in the Olympics were won by our women. So, but that is the story you're seeing play out in the public realm. To me, it represents a larger conversation and dialogue that India is having in terms of its sociology, in terms of its gender debate, as it were. You know, you have seen that horrible tragedy that befell India in Delhi when a girl was assaulted 2 years back, and the subsequent debate and dialogue that followed. And today, I think the Indian sportswomen excel themselves in not just badminton, wrestling, or gymnastics. It was like a range of sports. To me, it is a manifestation of a larger kind of emancipation that we are beginning to see, you know, from the social moorings, the kind of tight leash that we, India as a society, have exercised on women. And I think India will never move forward unless women are given equal rights and an equal space. And the Indian sportswomen doing so well gave this conversation such such a profile, unprecedented profile. So to me, that's the reason I really rooted for Indian sportswomen this year.
I think in this regard, the success of Dangal also, I mean, backs up whatever you're saying.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, again, a story. Look at the story of Dangal. Forget the cinematic part of it, but the subtext, or rather the story on which it was based, about this women from a village in Haryana. The worst sex ratio in the country is in Haryana. It tells you such a damaging story about the gender debate in that state. And from there, they challenge these norms, they challenge these sexist orderings, they challenge this male chauvinism there, and they come out in a sport which is supposed to be the so-called macho sport, wrestling. And they do well. So to me, I mean, my spine tingles when I read a story about these women wrestlers from Haryana.
Okay, so the last one on your list is post-truth world. For many of us who are not aware of the term post-truth, it's an adjective relating to circumstances in which objective facts are less influential in shaping public opinion than emotional appeals. Also interestingly, Oxford Dictionaries has declared it as its 2016 International Word of the Year. So what do you have to say about post-truth world?
See, you just read out the definition that Oxford Dictionary carried when they justified this word. I really like the idea. They dedicate one word for every year. And this year it happened to be post-truth. Many people call it post-fact also. Like you succinctly explained, it's a very simple thing that facts no longer matter. Emotion and even plain lying can win the day for you in terms of convincing someone in a debate. So a lot of people have pointed to the Trump win for this, but I think that's being a little too unfair on Trump, because the kind of lying, the kind of misuse of facts we have been seeing for a long, long time. It's just that we have never recognized it and never acknowledged it. And the tragedy of this whole thing is that it is happening in an era where the level of communication, the tools of communication are unprecedented. Like, for example, even 10 years back, if you had to speak to your grandmother in her village, you would have to send her an inland mail or a postcard, or you'd have to book an STD call or a trunk call. Today, your grandmom is a WhatsApp away, or a Skype away, or a cell phone away. I mean, look at the level of communication. But despite that, we have such a deficit in terms of facts. So there's a fundamental contradiction. I mean, I am not equipped to answer how we come around this contradiction, but I would point you to, I think, an author which we should all read. He was a physicist, he's no more, David Bohm. And he's written this little piece called Dialogue, and it's an assimilation of his various works, lectures and seminars. It's a very slim book. It's available on Kindle, so you can buy it on Amazon India. I think it's for about 300 odd rupees. And you will not regret it. It's a slim book, but tough read because it's profound. And in this, I'll just cut the long story short to say that he had a simple explanation of why this is happening. Why is it that in an era of such hyper-communication tools, we are not? And mind you, he wrote this in the 70s. There was no internet at that time. There was no dark social. There was nothing of that lot. But the same problem persisted then, because electronic media had just begun to take off. And he talked of the noise on television. He talked of these arid debates that were happening. And he said the problem here is very simple. We have stopped listening to each other. And I think what Bohm said in the 70s is so relevant for us today. So we have stopped listening to each other. So if I have a newer resolution for you, I would say, one, buy this book. And for me, it is start listening to people more.
Thank you so much for sharing your favorite issues of the year. So those were Anil's top stories for this week. Do let us know what you think. You can email us at feedback@lifemint.com or follow us at LifeMint on Twitter or Mint on Facebook. Thank you for listening, and see you next Friday.